Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. This is Matt Watson, your host today. I'm excited to be joined with Scott Tarsi from thecaddesignhelp.com. If you're looking to do some design work, he'll be the guy, and excited to talk to him about what he does today and how engineers are good entrepreneurs. And you know, I'm an engineer and so is he, and it's going to be a fun conversation today. Before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of the Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage your team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Scott, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
So I'm an engineer, but I think you're a totally different kind of engineer from me. What kind of engineer are you?
Yeah, before we started the recording, you said you were a computer engineer, computer science engineer. I'm a mechanical engineer. So I went to school at Virginia Tech for that. That's my degree. And basically what we do is we design like physical items, right? Like any physical product you see out in the market. It could be a golf ball, a golf club. It could be a laundry basket. I'm just looking around my house at stuff. You know, it could be nail clippers, coffee cup. Like all this kind of stuff falls under what engineers, I mean, cars are obviously a big one, you know, that's kind of what we tend to think of, you know, but there's, when you have a car, there's hundreds of engineers, just, you know, each engineer does one little piece. I used to work at a big company that made dishwashers, and I just worked on one little part of it, just the little control panel on top. That's literally the only thing I did. So anyways, that's kind of what mechanical engineers do.
So most people would probably assume that Silicon Valley probably has more software engineers than any other part of the United States. But actually, and I've been told this, I don't know if it's 100% true, Kansas City has more engineers per capita than any other place in the United States of all forms of engineers, not just software engineers. There are a lot of things designed here in Kansas City. It's kind of interesting. Like, we design a lot of the stadiums around the world, all the gas power plants, nuclear power plants. There's some big companies here, engineering firms in Kansas City. So
I have not been to Kansas City. I did not know that. But no, I mean, I could totally believe it. I mean, there's a lot of demand out there.
So I'm excited to talk today about how engineers make good entrepreneurs. But I'd first love to learn a little more about your background and, how you have, your career.
Yeah. So I went to school for college for mechanical engineering, and took a typical design job right out of college. I was working for a company called United Pet Group. So this company made like basically any kind of pet product. Specifically, I mean, they had dogs and cats and everything, but the division that I worked in, I was living in Virginia at the time, did fish stuff. So I did like aquariums, designing aquariums, designing pumps to pump the water, little like fountain accessory pieces, like all kinds of random stuff for a fish, indoor and outdoor. Actually, I did a lot more outdoor stuff for like an outdoor koi pond than I did indoor for the first couple of years, and then I would do both, I think, later on. And so that, I mean, that's a pretty typical start of a career for somebody that got my degree, because it pays pretty well. It's pretty easy to find a job. After that, I worked for a company in North Carolina called, well, most people have heard of Bosch. Bosch has many divisions. Like, they have Bosch Automotive. This was Bosch Home Appliances. So I specifically worked on dishwasher design. So we're talking about earlier about how there could be like hundreds of engineers. There was like 100 engineers just to make this dishwasher, of all kinds of different electrical engineers. Wow. For electronics, mechanical engineers like me for like the physical parts. And all I pretty much did was design the control panels, like where the buttons are. And like, I visited factories that made it, learned quite a bit. But what I found out over time was that I don't have the right personality. So I just don't fit into like a corporate environment very well. I'm too much of like a free thinker that I knew I needed to be my own boss of some type. And it made sense. I liked what I did for the most part. What I didn't like about corporate world was, like, you know, the politics and all the meetings and stuff like this. Like, the actual design work is what I'd like to do, like sitting down at the computer and drawing it up and making it work. And so basically, I started doing that on the side. At the same time, what I had done is I had left that job and I started working in sales, because I knew that I also had to be able to sell. And this was something I never learned and never done before. So I took a big pay cut in like 2014 and took a sales job and literally made 60 cold calls a day to people who had never heard of me selling. Like, there's like these smart screens, touch screen things for like offices. And that was interesting, to say the least. I wouldn't recommend people try to get work that way by cold calling, because it's super inefficient. But I learned how to do it. I learned how to talk to people and try to persuade them, I guess you could say, to you know, if there was even a slight demand for what we were providing, I could at least try to get a meeting set up. So I learned a lot about it. But at the same time, I was starting this this CAD design thing on the side, and it really started to pick up in like 2015. And it got to the point where I was able to quit that sales job and go full time with this. And so basically, my company is CADDesignHelp.com. And I started out just doing the 3D designs for typically like inventors or small businesses. So if you're like an individual inventor and you have a product you want to bring to market, you would hire me to design it, right? Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, I just did the design work. And what I realized is they all want to get a physical prototype made. That's typically the next step. And I was outsourcing it to this guy, and I said, I should bring this internally for a couple of reasons. One is I can verify the design better and faster. And two, this is like another revenue source. I would make a little bit off the top of whatever that guy was charging, but it wasn't the same as being able to do it internally myself and have a lot better margin. So that's what I did next. I bought. Yep, sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to guess you have a house full of 3D printers.
You're exactly right. So when I started out, I had one really crappy, cheap one, because I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't want to go invest a bunch of money. And honestly, some of the cheap ones I have now are better than that one, but like, I had to learn a lot. So I bought the one that was marketed really well. Let's put it that way. It wasn't very good, but it was marketed really well, and it caught my eye, and I bought it, and it sucked, and it took me like 6 months before I could make anything. But, you know, now I got rid of that machine. I've got 7 pretty good machines now. I'm pretty set. That pretty much covers everything I need to make. So that's kind of how I got started. I just, you know, at first I did the design work, then I outsourced the 3D printing, then I brought it internally. And since then, you know, I've expanded in a few ways. One is I learned that as an entrepreneur, you're going to have your ups and downs. And when things were slow, I realized I had these machines and I could make physical products I could sell online as like a secondary revenue source. So that's what I did, is I started designing all kinds of stuff, you know.
I see people on TikTok that do that. They make like all sorts of weird stuff, and they must have like an online e-commerce store. And
exactly. I have three.
Some of them are really cool.
Yeah. I have an Amazon, I have an eBay, and I have an Etsy store. And, you know, I try to find things that are in demand. Some of these things are just ornamental things. Some of these things are things that actually serve a utility. But either way, I'm trying to think about what would somebody buy. Like, one of my better inventions was I had a Yeti cup. And I'm a big golfer. I was on the golf course. I had my Yeti cup in my bag. I was walking the course that day, and it was splashing everywhere. There's a little hole in the top. And I'm like, why is there not a plug for this? And I Googled it, and I couldn't even find a plug. I was like, I can solve this problem in no time. So I did it. You know, it always takes a couple. I tell every inventor, it's like, you're not going to nail it the first time. I got pretty close. You know, I measured the hole. designed the thing, 3D printed, was a little bit too big, didn't fit, a little smaller. Okay, it fit pretty good. And I've made other versions since then. Like now I have a silicone version, which is perfect because it's like a swishable material.
Yeah, yeah.
Forms a perfect seal. But in any case, I made this, solved my own problem. I said, you know what? I bet other people would buy this. And it still sells today. This was 5 years ago. I mean, this is like an extra $50-$100 a month. I mean, it's a very cheap $2 piece, but you know, it cost me pennies to make, if that.
Now, do you print those at home or you buy those in bulk now?
I just make everything myself.
Even if it's silicone?
What'd you say?
Even if it's silicone?
Yeah, what I do is I 3D print a mold and then I pour the silicone in the mold.
Okay. Got it.
But I have a couple different, I charge more for that because it's a lot more labor.
Yeah.
But it's a better product too.
Or if you have any kids, you put them to work.
I actually hired a kid in the neighborhood. I don't have any kids myself, but there's a kid in the neighborhood who wants to make some money, and I pay him like, you know, a decent rate cash. So it's all on the table, and he comes over and, you know,
pour some molds for me.
Yeah, pour silicone molds for me.
Have you ever seen the guy on TikTok? I'm pretty sure it's called Unnecessary Inventions.
Yes, I need to look at this more. I don't do TikTok a lot, but I have a friend that uses it, and he'll send me some of those videos, and I've seen it, and it's pretty interesting. I mean,
he has like the best channel ever, and you would absolutely love it because it's all stuff he like 3D prints, and it's like the weirdest, like goofiest invention you would ever imagine. Like, why would somebody create this?
It's like yes, it can be done, but should you have done that?
Oh yeah, it's incredible. So I'm
doing it for fun, obviously, because it's like don't waste your if you're trying to turn a profit here, you don't waste your time with stuff like that. But he probably monetizes his channel because it gets tons of views. That's probably
millions. So yeah. I'm curious, what is like the coolest thing somebody's ever came to you and asked you to design?
Man, that's a good question because I've done so many things. One of the weirdest things was this, like, they called it the doggy dong. So it was like this dog toy shaped like a dildo. It was really weird. And I'm like, I don't know why you'd want this thing sitting on the floor in your house. If somebody comes over for dinner, they don't even know what this thing, I mean, it looked so just wrong in so many ways.
I was going to ask you if you've ever been asked to print, like, create design like weird sex toys. I guess.
At least once a month, I get at least like a job, somebody asking, and I put in a bid. People have like really weird sex toy ideas. Like, I don't ask any questions. You know what I mean? I'm not turned down work, but it's just like sometimes I get this stuff, and I'm thinking like, you're crazy. Like, this is so bizarre. But some of the cooler things, I did this one thing with this paintbrush. This guy was like really good, like painted, like artists and some kind of bowl. Like, so apparently you use mineral spirits to clean paintbrushes.
Yes.
And like it evaporates. So he found a way to like, and it's expensive, the mineral spirits. So he found a way to create this bowl that would seal and like you could keep it in there for like a couple of weeks. It would save you a lot of money in the long run. And that was a long time ago I did that, but that was a really complicated product because it had all these crazy ridges on it and stuff. It was like really hard to mold, but we figured it out. You know, I've learned a lot about like what you learn doing this is like a lot of the best inventions are from people that work in very specific industries. So it's not necessarily something that's going to apply to everybody in the world.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But something that like I had this one guy's an electrician, and like when he goes into these buildings, like for like commercial buildings, and they put in the electrical wire, like there was some issue of like it getting cut, and this little plastic tube thing we made would like prevent that. And like every single electrician would buy it because it would save them so much money. Like that's the kind of best inventions that you have. If you work in a very specific industry or have a hobby, like if you're a golfer or a golf pro, I've done tons of golf things. Like if you know a certain drill that you want people to do or like a certain thing you want them to, like if you can create, like if you know a lot about it, that's where the money is. Like because it's like really simple things like, oh, I want an iPhone case. Well, it's like, okay, dude, like there's a bazillion iPhone cases. Like yours isn't probably gonna be that different. But if you're in a specific industry that there's a certain segment of people that everyone's going to want it, and it's a big problem, that's where you want to try to create a product.
So I do want to make sure and mention so everybody knows that you also have your own podcast called The Engineering Entrepreneur. You want to tell us a little bit about that real fast?
I started that for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, obviously, like credibility out there, you know, getting your name out there, SEO, marketing, all that stuff. But also because I wanted to listen to a podcast about somebody doing something like I was doing, and there nothing existed, at least in 2016 when I started it. So that's why I started the podcast. And so I've interviewed tons of different engineers and entrepreneurs and a lot of stuff related to inventors, like patent agents that work at the patent office. So if you want to know how stuff gets patented. Like, I've learned a ton. I've done at least three episodes with like a patent agent before, or a patent attorney. You know, there's a slight difference there, but tons of people have invented something, and it's really cool. It's a lot like Shark Tank, but like verbally, right? Like the inventor episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, how did I come up with this idea? How did I create the product? Like, how did I do the marketing? Like, all the stuff you need as an inventor. I've talked with people about it, and it's just like Shark Tank, but it's like way more in detail, because in Shark Tank, they'll show like a little 5-minute segment of like what they did, but it doesn't really go into the details of everything. And that's really where my show came in for. And those are those kind of episodes. I mean, we've have other types where it's just like engineers working at companies, or it could be engineers having their own company like me. And so I've done like 120 episodes so far.
Oh, wow. Well, good. Well, so I'd love to talk more today about being an engineer, and then how that's actually kind of a good trait for us to be an entrepreneur. But maybe before we talk about that, I almost feel like being an engineer is actually has some bad traits for being an entrepreneur. And maybe you and I, so we're both different kinds of engineers, but it seems like you and I, for most engineers, let's be honest, don't have very good communication skills, or not very good at talking to other people, and are usually not very good at sales. But interesting enough, you said like you forced yourself to do sales. And actually, when I was in college, I worked in sales. I worked at Sears and I sold furniture. And I think it probably helped me a lot with getting better at talking to people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I noticed a big difference between just how my personality was at like, you know, the engineering jobs compared to other people. Like I was much more of like, not go-getter is not the right word. It's more like I would break the mold, right? So most people would just fall in line, and I would be like, no, like this doesn't make sense. Like we should do it this way. And I got in a lot of trouble for that, for like basically speaking my mind. And that's kind of where I realized like, I don't really fit in here. Like I don't follow the mold that they want us to do. And, you know, I'm a fairly outgoing person, but like, it's different when you're selling and marketing. So yeah, that's something that I just said, okay, I need this skill. And the best way to do it is go take a job, but that's what I do. So I just made that decision. I mean, I really wanted to work for myself. I really wanted to, you know, and the benefits of working for yourself, mostly for me, is controlling my time. Like, I don't like being told I'm going to be sitting in a cubicle from 8 to 5. Like, that was honestly the number one motivator for me to get out. I don't mind working. I don't mind, especially doing design work. I don't like the meetings part, like all that stuff, like sitting.
I hear you.
But in stupid paperwork, which I always had to do. But the design work part I've always liked. So I don't mind working, but I want to be able to go and travel and do things during the day and just whatever. And that was the biggest motivator. So I was just going to do whatever it took. And I had a pretty good feeling taking a sales job and learning that was a big step towards it. So I just did what had to be done. But I think most engineers aren't going to have that skill set right off the bat, because there's zero training in college, and we don't really do that many team projects.
Not usually our personality type. It's usually the
opposite. We're like loners that like sit in front of a computer and like grind it out. And I still do that because I like it. But you have to have the other side as an entrepreneur. Like if you can't pick up the phone and call somebody and like talk to them and like listen to the issue so you can, you know, do the job and give them a quote, then you're just never going to make it. Like that's the number one thing too. It's like anytime I have a couple websites, or the people come to me directly. Like I try to call them anytime I can over email. Like I'll email first, but as soon as I have a minute, like 5 minutes free, I'm going to call them, because there's just something about talking to somebody on the phone versus email that's just going to help you land that job so much higher.
So why do you think that engineers make good entrepreneurs?
Yeah. So basically on the flip side of that, I think it's the creativity, because an entrepreneur, like it's not like you just show up at work and get paid and that's all you have to do. Like sometimes things aren't going to go well. Like for a perfect example, like I talked about earlier, it was like multiple revenue streams, right? Like design work got real slow a couple of times over the years. And I got creative and I said, okay, well, what can I do as another revenue source to take up this gap? And that's where I said, I use the 3D printers to make products. And I just feel like engineers think that way, right? We're problem solvers.
Yeah.
So I saw the problem and I was able to figure out a solution to it.
Well, and I feel like especially in early stage startups, there's always a lot of problems, a lot of unknowns, a lot of things to figure out. And you need people that have that in their DNA. They're just good problem solvers and they're willing to, you know, jump and build wings, right? Like it's, you just have to figure it out as you go. But some people cannot handle that scenario, right? They need to know where they're going, when they're going. They need to be very organized, all that.
Yeah. My wife is exactly like that. Like she could never do what I'm doing. Like she needs someone to tell her, this is what you're doing now. This is the task. This is where you're going to be. Like, it could not be more 180 for me.
Yes.
Which is again, like why I never fit into the corporate world is like, if I saw a better way of doing something, I would want to do it that way. And I would be told by a lot of the bosses I had, it's like, no, you have to do it our way. Even if I have no reason behind it, other than we've always done it that way. And that drove me crazy. I said, no, this is super inefficient and you're not listening to me, you know?
Well, and then as companies scale, they need that opposite, right? They need people to just like fall in line and do what they're told and carry
out. Yeah, and there are people out there like that.
Yeah.
And if you're hiring for that position, like that's something that's super important to pay attention to. If you get a guy like me, if you have a job like that, where it's somebody who just needs to follow the directions and not do anything creative, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
You need a person who wants to do that or whatever, because otherwise they're going to be getting happy and they're going to leave. And then you're going to have to rehire somebody else, right, for that position. So, yeah, I think personality-wise is a big part of, like, what job you're going to do or not do, right?
So if you do need to hire software engineers, it doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably, use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs, and then see what developers, engineers are available to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. So, what else? What else do you think makes engineers a good entrepreneur?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm trying to expand upon that. You know, maybe just the training in just the world, right? So like if you're an engineer, you do a lot of science, right? You know, understand how the world works. So just being like super realistic with things maybe helps a lot. You know, you don't try things that are too crazy, I suppose. Versus somebody that maybe doesn't have that kind of background, they might try to create things that are just impossible. And so, you know, waste time creating impossible things versus somebody's like, okay, well, I know that Newton's first law is, you know, whatever it is, I should know. It's like, you have a good place to start from. It's a little easier to get your product designed, developed, starting from that standpoint, because you've got a good background in it.
Well, I think one of the keys there is you're an inventor, right? Like for a lot of things, it takes an inventor to come up with some crazy idea, whatever it is, solve a problem that nobody's ever solved before, look at it in a different way, and then be able to build a business around it. And maybe some engineers are great at figuring out like the patent or the thing or the design. Maybe some of them aren't as great as building the business around it, but they, you know, they can be the wizard behind the curtain too, that, you know, is coming up with crazy ideas.
Yeah. And so that is kind of a difference. It's like you can be an inventor, you could be an engineer, you could be both, you could be a business owner, but not be an engineer. Like there's different things. And it kind of comes down to what you want to do. Like some people that go on Shark Tank, they just want to license it. And I wouldn't mind that personally. Like the part I really like is the design part. Now, I don't have those kind of connections. So sometimes I just got to do the marketing myself, and I've started to learn to appreciate it more. The last few years I've learned a lot more about the marketing side, like the SEO side, how important that is. And I've just taught myself a lot. I mean, everything in the world is a great quote I heard from a guy. Everything in the world is explained on YouTube. Like if you need to learn something, you go to the YouTube. And so I learned everything about SEO because my website wasn't doing well. It wasn't ranking. I wasn't getting a lot of leads, and I actually hired a guy, a marketing company, and they screwed up the whole thing. Like everything they did was wrong. I was like, I should have just done this myself a year ago.
And
I went and fixed everything in the last 2 weeks.
And why do we pay $25,000 a year for college now?
Right. I mean, I'll be honest. Like,
I don't understand.
At this point, like, it is what it is at this point. I don't regret going to college. Like, I paid off my loans. It's all done. But knowing what I know now, leaving high school, I probably would have done like trade school, man. It would be way less money, been an electrician, and just started a business like that. And like, once you get established, hire other electricians to do all the work and just automate as much as you can. And like, yeah, if you got to fill in for a job one day, it's fine. But like, there's so much demand for that kind of stuff because so few people are doing it. But I, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I didn't know that when I was 18 years old. I just, everyone said, you know, my dad said, go to college. Everyone said, go to college. I said, okay, I'll go to college. But knowing what I know now, yeah, I mean, incurring all that debt and everything. Yes, I learned a lot in school, but I use 10% of it at this point. I mean, all the calculus I did, all this other stuff, like I don't use it anymore at all. And so while I appreciate, you know, going through it, or with other people that have, it's, there's very few jobs, like unless you go be a professor or you're doing like, you know, some kind of weird, like R&D, it's like NASA or something. Like a lot of this kind of math that I went through wasn't really necessary.
Yeah.
You know,
some of it is academic. And so the same thing on the software side, you have a lot of people that will go to college for computer science, and like 90% of the software developers don't need to learn a lot of the shit that they teach, would teach you in computer science, because a lot of it's low level programming stuff or theory and things like that. But actual on the job these days, the tools that we have available to write software make it so easy that like 90% of all those problems are abstracted away. Like I don't need to know how to write a bubble sort algorithm. I just like one line of code, dot sort, I'm done. Like there are frameworks for this. Like I don't really need to know how it works under the cover.
Right, exactly. Like I've learned a little bit of coding myself, just for like I control an Arduino using a little bit of coding. And it's like, it's all online. Like you just Google, I need this little thing. And it's just like, it's more about like knowing what you need. And then you just Google it and you just copy paste. Like there are CAD files on websites where it's like, I don't necessarily need to go design this thing. I can download a model and just modify it. Same with what you're doing, like with the code. Like you don't necessarily, now I will say that even if you can do that, you still have to have the skill set to know how to modify it and know what you needed in the first place, which means you almost need to start at the very beginning, at least once, building all those things so that you can appreciate / understand how it was done, at least a little bit. Then after that, yeah, just download it every time. But I think having that little bit of background makes a big difference. It makes you a lot more dangerous, like as a designer, no matter if it's software or mechanical stuff.
I think one of the other problems that engineers have in regards to being an entrepreneur is we tend to be tinkerers, and we tinker with the product a lot. And it's easy, especially on the software side, to spend forever optimizing the software, building the software, tinkering with all of it.
Something
that you never get it to market. Like you never sell it.
Yes,
you're just
you
like,
you have to be careful. Absolutely. You have to be careful of this. I have a client and I appreciate him hiring me every month, but he has been working on this exercise wheel for forever. He started with somebody before me. I mean, I must've changed something on this exercise wheel. Let's say that we added like a grip on it, like it's one of those ab wheel kind of things, but it's like a spin on that. And we'll add some grip texture to it. Then literally the next iteration, we'll remove it. And then two iterations later, we'll put it back on. Like he's just going in circles with this thing. And he's been working on it for, I mean, it's never going to be 100%.
It's shit that doesn't even matter.
It doesn't even really matter that much.
It doesn't even matter.
Who cares? Who knows if the customer even wants it? Like I read a book about this, The Lean Startup. This is like really important for people to listen. Like if you're an inventor or you want to create something, get your minimum viable product. Just get the lowest level thing that even somewhat works and get it out there, because then you're going to learn really quickly, like what people want, what they don't want. You can make a few more changes and then you're done and you start making money versus spending money forever. And that's what people do. Like some people are just so perfectionist, and that is a downside of being an engineer, is that too many engineers want to be perfectionists. Like the math has to be perfect. This file has to be perfect. It's like, no, it doesn't. It's the 80-20 rule. Like you live in the real world long enough and you learn that 80% is good enough, right?
Well, and the last 20% takes 80% of the time also to build.
Right. The 80-20 rule applies all the time. Just follow the 80-20 rule, right? When you're 80% there, you're done and you move on to the next thing, because that extra 20% is not worth chasing.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of inventors and engineers make this mistake because they want to be perfectionists. And if it's like for a personal hobby or whatever, I mean, that's fine. That's whatever you want to do. But if you want to create a sustainable business, that is not the way to go about it, because you're going to spend so much time down in the weeds, and you could have moved on to other bigger, better things at that point.
So when starting a business, so if you're an engineer, how important do you think it is for an engineering personality type to have other founders that help balance us out, like somebody who's really good at sales or operations, because those aren't necessarily our personality.
I've never really thought too much. I mean, for me personally, like I like being just a single person. I'm incorporated as a single member LLC, right? So I'm the only employee. Now, yes, I have contractors. I've got five guys that do CAD for me. You know, men and women, I shouldn't say guys. Five people around the world that do CAD for me. Because the only way to scale is to have other people. Like when I land too many jobs that I can do myself or that I want to do, I have them do it, right? I have a virtual assistant who helps me out. But at the end of the day, I'm the single owner, right? So all the top level decisions I get to make. And I definitely don't micromanage because that's, again, almost like the perfectionist thing. If you're going to micromanage these people working for you, nitpick every little thing, it would be faster just to do it yourself. So I give them basic blueprints and give them pretty good leeway on how to do the design work. And I always check it over. But once they've done a few projects for me, they get pretty good at it. So the five people that I have now doing CAD work, you know, I've had to hire and fire a few. We got like a perfectly like, you know, efficient system working where I can set up the Dropbox folder and say, here's what we're making. You know, here's generally how I want it done. And boom, they knock it out. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I've been able to free up enough of my time that I can personally do the sales. I can manage a lot of things. But I don't think it's a bad thing if you want to partner with somebody and then you only focus on your thing. But then anytime you partner with somebody, you're going to have some
has its own problems.
Possibly arguments. You know, I've got a friend who does woodworking. He does it's a small something small batch carpentry. I live in Charlotte. Small batch carpentry Charlotte or something. And he just split up with his partner because basically this guy, Preston, he loves it so much that he wants to work 80 hours a week. All right. And the other guy, they both were physically building. They had a couple helpers, but they were the business owners and they both were working on building the furniture. I mean, that's the number one task is getting it actually made. I think they both did a little bit of sales, but they got so many referrals. They don't need to do much sales. Like just word of mouth was like giving them constant work. But the other guy had two kids and couldn't and would not work weekends. And so then they got into a big argument over how the money should be split because Preston was putting in more hours and the other guy just can't do it. Like his wife is not going to let him go away all weekend to work on the wood. So they actually split up because this is just too much of a deal for them of like how they, because they were splitting everything 50-50, but Preston was getting mad that he wasn't getting more when he was doing a lot more work. And you know, who knows how they discussed it up front about the hours and how they would do it. But at the end of the day, you know, this was a fundamental problem for them. And so this is kind of the downside of being a partner.
Having business partners is always a problem. I've had a lot of business partners and they've almost always been a big problem for one reason or another. So,
yeah. So I feel like it's a hard model to make work unless you and the guy are like super on page. But even then I would want everything in writing of what our policies are going to be because once you add one person beyond yourself, then
I feel like on the software side, if you're trying to create a SaaS business, if you're a first-time entrepreneur and you're more of a software engineering type person, I feel like you almost have to have a co-founder and definitely not another co-founder that's also a software engineer. Like that's even worse idea. I feel like you got to have somebody that can help with the sales and operational side of it because most software engineers are just terrible at all of it. And they need somebody else to help balance them out from an executive perspective and, you know, being able to run the business and figure things out. And even though I didn't have the greatest business partners in the past, I'm sure what I was doing would not have been successful without them.
So is your current company you or do you have like a business? Because you're the engineering side. Are you doing it all yourself now that you because this is
so,
like.
So our company, Full Scale, me and another gentleman own it, and he runs the business. He's the CEO. I'm actually am not part of the day-to-day part of it. So he runs it.
Okay.
But and so his background is more in sales, sales marketing. Okay. My first business I had started. The other guy was more of a salesperson, and so you know he helped bring the first customers, and I built the product and whatever, and you know, we had some differences down the road, as you mentioned earlier. You just gave some other examples. But I would not, especially at that time, I was like, say, 21, 22 years old when I started that company. Like, it would have been hard for me to, like, go around to random car dealerships and try and sell software to them or whatever. And he had the relationships and, you know.
So that made a lot of sense. I was like 33 when I maybe 32 when I started this. So I had a lot of like, let's say real world experience, right? Working with people of all different types, like working for big companies. You know, I had, like I said, I hadn't done sales, but when I started working that sales job, that kind of really made me a lot more comfortable with the whole selling side of things. And so maybe just because of where I was in life, it worked out. And, but I'm also the type of person where I'm pretty open-minded. Like, I think a lot of engineers are stubborn and they don't want to like listen to other people and take advice. And that's just not me. And I think just because having that attitude enables me to like expand to different skill sets and just being able to do everything I need to do.
I would say on the software side, I definitely run into software engineers where they think it's more art. Like some of the worst software engineers I've ever worked with were some of the absolute smartest. They just were so hung up about writing like the world's perfect code and it being like some art form to them where it's not. Like the customer doesn't give a shit what programming language it's in and how it works. Like they don't care how the sausage is made, right? They don't care about any of it. And some people just are terrible perfectionists and to their own downfall.
Yeah. And if that's you, you've got to...
You can't run a business.
Yeah, you got to. You want to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have to find somebody who's willing to go in with it with you, and they're going to handle that. So that's, I agree with you there. If you're that way and you got to be this perfectionist type, yeah, you're not going to, need to have somebody else there.
So I want to ask you about, so obviously 3D printers have been all the rage over the last few years. How would you say, how was that in 2022? Are they still not as popular as they were? Like the first wave of it is kind of over, and you know, obviously there's still a lot of uses for them, but like, you know, but just kind of curious, what is your take on the like 3D market?
So actually 3D printing's been around since the 80s. What made all the news in like 2012-ish? I think it was the patent ran out. So really that's all that happened. You couldn't really buy a 3D printer unless you bought it from Stratasys, which was out of the range of everybody because it was like $50,000 for the lowest end machine.
For rapid
patent expiring changed everything and actually made a lot of what I do now possible. I mean, between the internet and the patent expiring, I don't know if I could do what I do right now. I could not do what I'm doing right now. This type of career would not be possible prior to those two things. Internet's obviously a little older than the patent expiring, but you know, being able to get work from wherever in the world I need to get it from and being able to have an affordable 3D printer. So really that was what changed it. So yeah, there was a lot of rage about that because yeah, now all this competition came up and you could buy a printer for under $1,000 and that was a big deal. All that being said, I think it's still very prevalent. Tons of people do it. There's always new machines, new technology. I mean, the technology of FDM 3D printing, which is one most people know about, where it's the plastic wire gets pulled through and melted, that can only be improved so much further. Like there's new sensors that detect if something came off the bed. Like there's certain things like that will keep getting better, but like the basic technology and the speed of it is basically going to stay the same. There's really no way you can print faster, at least from the science and everything I understand, much more than you do now. So it's like, that's why I have 7 printers, because if things get really in demand and some of the products are selling like crazy, like one of my products is like 11 inches tall. It just takes 7 hours to print. I've optimized everything to get it to that fast. It's never going to be faster than that without the quality dropping. So I need an extra 2 or 3 machines to get a couple done a day, depending on how many are selling. And that's just the side of it that's not going to change. But there's other, you know, types of technology like the SLA with the laser, and there's other types that are becoming much more affordable all the time. And I have an SLA machine, the Form 2, but there's even cheaper ones than that now, especially from like over in China. So
if I wanted to buy a 3D printer, just to print like goofy things for my kids or whatever, just like jack around with, what kind of 3D printer would you recommend?
So of all the ones I have, the Ultimaker 2 is the best. Now, it wasn't the cheapest. It was about $2,000. And that's an old model. I don't know if you can buy that. What'd you say?
Dang, that's expensive.
Yeah, but it was built with really good parts. So all these 3D printers that are built with 3D printed parts, it sounds good in theory, but 3D printed parts just aren't that strong. The Ultimaker 2 was built with injection molded parts, and so they're very durable. And it's just worth it to not have to go in and replace all these pieces that break on the cheaper printers. Like, that's what's really annoying to me. Like, I bought a couple of printers, the Creality CR printers. I have the CR, or the CR10 S4 and S5. Like, They were only like $600 or $700. But man, I mean, like usually what I do, like when I get these is like, I join the Facebook group because that's where everybody's talking about it. And if you have a problem, there's somebody who's had it before you and they can answer it. And like the number of parts that people are like, when you buy the Creality printer, replace all these things. It's like half the printer you got to replace the day you buy it. I'm like, I don't have time for this. Like, well, I need these machines to create revenue, not waste my time.
Yeah. So, I mean, what about the guy with me, like me though? I mean, I'm not trying to start my own Etsy store. I'm just trying to print some goofy crap with my kids. So,
all right. So the question is, how much time do you want to spend fixing the machine? If you enjoy that and you want to spend tons of time, buy the cheapest machine and save a buck, but you will have to spend tons of time fixing it. If you don't want to do that, then you got, I mean, I can give you plenty of advice about it because there's tons of more machines I've never used. But from the ones I have used, the most expensive were not necessarily the most reliable. I have a Raise Pro 2 Plus, and that thing hasn't worked in 6 months. Now, I could probably, if I spend the next 5 hours, figure it out. But I have other machines that get stuff done, so I haven't bothered with it. But it was a $6,000 machine, and it has not been as reliable as I had hoped.
So I'm curious for your CAD design business. So do a lot of your clients try and do this stuff themselves and try and print stuff themselves and then figure out like, is this way too complicated?
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Oh, you develop.
People go and get like crappy online CAD programs that aren't very good and they'll make stuff, but then they'll be like, the manufacturer can't use this file. And I'm like, yeah, that program can't export the file that he needs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, or it wasn't designed correctly for manufacturing. Like, people like that are generally easier for me to work for because at least they've already put some thought into it and they've created something and they're more motivated. Just the fact that you were willing to like at least try shows that you're pretty serious about it. So I get some of those, but there's plenty of people that just give me like napkin sketches, which is fine too. The only thing I can't do is I can't design something if they don't give me any kind of visual. Like if they just write, like, unless it's like literally a rectangle or a block. But outside of stuff like that, like when people write like a paragraph to describe it, I'm like, it's really hard for me to know what this thing is or doing. You know, go to Google Images and send me a couple of things. You know, no matter what you're making, there's always something kind of close.
Yeah.
To say, hey, it's like this thing except for that. And that like helps the most.
And it's no different in software, right? Like I have no problem with like beg, borrow, and steal from other people's designs and their inspirations and improve on them or whatever, right? Like that's just human nature.
That's just the easiest way to do it. Like why make it harder than it has to be?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I had this guy that he wanted like a coffee maker and it's like, he did it exactly how I would have done it. He's like, here's an existing coffee maker, but I don't like these things about it. Here's what we're changing. And yeah, we'll change the look a little bit so it doesn't look like a complete ripoff, but like that explained it perfectly to me. I said, okay, you want the coffee filter area to be a little deeper and not as wide. Okay, like super straightforward stuff. And like those are the projects that are the easiest because like I don't have to go, there's not a lot of back and forth. Like I know exactly what to do.
Well, I think this has been a great episode talking about engineers and engineers, how our personality types can be good or bad entrepreneurs at times. But if you need to hire software engineers, let Full Skill help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts when you visit fullskill.io. All you need to do is answer a few questions, let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced engineering team. At Full Skill, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullskill.io. So I think this has been a fun episode for those who are thinking about doing some sort of 3D design and need this kind of help. Tell us a little more about how they can reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. My website, caddesignhelp.com. My email's info@caddesignhelp.com. And, you know, before we sign off, I want to tell everybody. So I've been asked by a lot of other engineers, like, how did I create this business? Like literally what we talked about. Mm-hmm. And I actually created an online course going like the step-by-step of literally like the details of what I've done that I think can apply to other mechanical engineers or any type of engineer that wants to start a business and really get them going and give them a lot of like, you know, skip a lot of mistakes I made along the way. And so this course is under engineeringpreneurschool.thinkific.com, which the .thinkific, like part of the domain is the, is the platform I use to create the course.
Okay.
And I'll send you the link so people don't have to try to remember all that. They can just click on it.
We'll try and put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely, Matt. Thanks for having me, and catch you later.
All right. Take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.